This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It's 9:37 right now. It's time for Pressing Matters, is what we have every Monday morning, together with P. Gunasekaram, who's, of course, the joint CEO and founding editor of Kini Biz. Good morning, Gunath.
Morning, David.
Thanks so much for joining us once again. Today, every week, Gunath joins us with a rather interesting matter or issue to talk about. Some plucked from Kini Biz, some, of course, we bring it to this table here and we discuss about it. Today's issue is about the ringgit and the way it's been traveling, nothing but just south since the beginning of the year. Right?
Well, I mean, the ringgit's the flavor of the conversation at the moment, right? I mean, everyone's talking about the weakening ringgit. So, I mean, we saw that it weakened to, I think it was 3.77 last week, and people were talking about how it could hit 3.380.
That was the lowest level in 9 years, and to 3.77. The pegged rate in 1998, at the time that exchange control was imposed, was 3.80.
Right.
But after hitting a 9-year low in the next 2 days, it was the best performing currency, you know, over the last 2 weeks. So this basically indicates a very volatile environment for the ringgit. So the volatility is usually caused by short-term, outflows and inflows. So I think when if you are talking about the ringgit market, you need to understand the balance of payment situation. So this is essentially the sum of the trade in goods and services, which is known as the current account, and then add this up to the capital account, which is the move inflows and outflows of capital, including short-term portfolio outflows. So you have to look at it at any point of time as a sum total of this situation. So if your balance of payments is in deficit, that means there is outflow of currency. If your balance of payments is in positive territory, then there is inflow of currency. So if there is a deficit, your Bank Negara's foreign exchange reserves fall. So essentially, people are taking money out of the country. So that will be taken out of foreign exchange reserves from Bank Negara. So at any point in time, the ringgit movement is dependent more on the short-term inflows and outflows. You know, basically, the trade and services account tends to be sort of like constant. But the trade and services account is what will depend very primarily on the economic fundamentals at the moment. So if money is coming into the stock or bond or ringgit markets, then the ringgit appreciates simply because there is a demand for ringgit at that point of time. And if there is an outflow, the demand is for US dollars and for other currencies, and then it depreciates. So the one thing is very obvious from the current situation. There is actually a lot of short-term outflows, and therefore there is a weakness in the ringgit at the moment. So it's a question of how long these short-term outflows will continue.
Certainly I think Malaysia has been put on the defensive, because if you look at foreign exchange reserves, it has fallen from the 140-150 US dollar billion level to right now about 100 billion. So Bank Negara has spent some degree of time actually also trying to defend the ringgit in international markets. The other thing about the balance of payment is that the imports, the trade is quite a big percentage of balance of payments,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Imports and exports. And so the question of whether a weak ringgit is good or bad for the country, at the moment, it's kind of a moot argument, because the imports are as much as the exports. The weak ringgit doesn't necessarily help exports, because we also import a lot of stuff.
All right, okay. If you're talking about the export situation, it will be true that a weaker ringgit will help promote exports. So simply because in US dollar terms or in foreign currency terms, whatever you're making becomes cheaper. So, and then if also on the converse side, if your products are priced in US dollars, then that same thing when it's repatriated back into Malaysia gets you higher ringgit, you know, more ringgit because of the weaker ringgit. So very often depreciation is considered as a way to fix the trade imbalance, when the trade imbalance is not in favor of the country concerned. But in this case, it is now. So if you look at some of the statistics indicate that the current account is still in substantial surplus. For the first quarter, it was in surplus by about 10 billion. And if you compare that to the immediately preceding quarter, the figure was around 5.3 billion. So it's actually increased quite a bit. So we don't have a current account worry at the moment as far as the economy is concerned. It's not really concerning. It's not a worrying problem at this point in time.
So what is a worrying problem if it's not the current account?
So I think basically there are two things at play here. You know, the one is that the there is outflow on the capital account, and to be more precise, it's on the short-term capital account, because your longer-term capital account will be a foreign direct investments, you know, mm-hmm. and things like that, which are not easy to remove over a short period of time.
Right.
So those are much more stable inflows. Whereas portfolio inflow, say, into the bond market or the equity market, that can be repatriated at the drop of a hat. So one has to look at what exactly is causing these short-term outflows and then make a call on whether this is likely to be sustained or not. So which is what we'll be talking about shortly. You know, we need to examine what are the factors which are accounting for the short-term outflows, you know?
So how much of the short-term outflows do you think are beyond our control? External forces, the Fed raising rates and
yes,
money being pulled
yes,
out of that?
Yes, it'll be those kind of reasons that we are talking, that we'll be talking about.
Interesting. Mm. You know what, if you have anything to weigh in on this matter as well, why not just call, tweet us at BFM Radio, or you can also SMS us as well at 016-201-9000. This issue actually wants a little bit more looking into, as Guna is going to be asking some questions next on BFM 89.9. It's Pressing Matters together with P. Gunasegram, who's the founding editor and also joint CEO of KiniBiz. Today we're talking about the ringgit. And so, Guna, early on you explained about it. Now okay. You have a couple of questions that you are.
Yeah, the,
to
just
ask.
Just a quick summary of some of the reasons which are accounting for the outflows. Mm. One is a possible interest rate hike in the U.S. I mean, people have been waiting with bated breath for the Fed to increase the interest rate. That has not come out. So the longer that's delayed, the more uncertainty is raised as far as that is concerned. And then there are, number two would be, this is perception, concerns about 1 MDB. Mm. And three is about lower oil prices. And then number four would be a possible Fitch downgrade of the sovereign rating of the country. And then finally, you're talking about political uncertainty, in the wake of the 1 MDB scandal. This could become more prominent as a reason. So in the light of those reasons, some of the questions we should be asking is, can Malaysia withstand the outflows?
Yeah, I think that a lot of these reasons that are given are very logical. Mm. But also, the question of whether the US dollar is rising or whether the ringgit is falling independently, right? Because if you look at the movement of the US dollar against a basket of currencies, the US dollar has actually strengthened about 20%. So it's not just the ringgit that has weakened. The US dollar has also strengthened quite tremendously as well.
The US dollar is strengthening right across the board against most of the currencies. But over a period of time, the ringgit seems to have like fallen more than the other currencies now. So that has been one of the points that have been made about the ringgit. You know, so that could be entirely a trading reason, or there could be some other reasons. I mean, I suppose it's unfortunate that you have a confluence of circumstances as far as Malaysia is concerned. One is the oil prices falling, and Malaysia is an energy exporting country. Number two will be the 1 MDB issues, you know. And then number three is the possible downgrade of the by Fitch of the sovereign rating. So that those things make it a bit worse as far as Malaysia is concerned. But I think one should examine these factors a bit more closely.
Okay, if we could go into the 1 MDB issue, right, Guna? Mm. If you could, you know, kind of walk us through the steps about how exactly does negative perception about 1 MDB impact the ringgit?
All right. I think one is, well, if you have a lot billions at risk as a result of 1 MDB, that will affect the financial situation of the country itself, because 1 MDB is wholly owned by the Ministry of Finance Incorporated, and the government is obliged to stand by 1 MDB under any circumstances. We feel that the government will not allow 1 MDB to default on any of its obligations. So that might worsen the financial position of the country. The other thing, there is also some exposure to the banking system of 1 MDB loans. And although Bank Negara has given an assurance that it will not systemically affect, no systemic risk. But it could still affect the profitability of some of the banks if it should reach a situation of default. But again, like I said, default is not going to be likely. The government will be standing ready to help 1 MDB. The other thing which may well turn out to be the most important thing at this point in time is the political uncertainty. Yeah? So there is a lot of pressure on the PM, you know, to either explain 1 MDB or to step down. So if he's going to step down, who's going to take over from him? You know? Right. So what kind of policies are we going to have after that? How is the new man at the top? In fact, who's going to be the new man? You know, and how is that going to affect the entire political and economic scenario for the country? So that's a genuine concern that any investor, in fact, any Malaysian will have, you know, to see how this whole thing about 1 MDB pans out. So that might be the big thing which is affecting, uncertainty at this point of time.
Actually, yeah, you're right. Mm. Actually, that's so important because the weak ringgit will actually make the external debt a lot more expensive. I mean, the ringgit has actually weakened about 20%. The external debt right now, according to some numbers here, 768 billion ringgit at the last count in March 2015, but that would have probably increased a little bit more because of the weak ringgit, the translation losses and so on. And that's a huge, substantial proportion of the GDP.
Okay, the one thing to remember is this will pan out if the ringgit weakness is sustained. So if the ringgit goes back to strength again, then you don't have that problem anymore.
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
So it's a question of whether we have a new level for the ringgit. I would think not yet, at least. So because, I mean, many of these, the reason I'm saying is that the economic fundamentals still remain quite intact. So if you look at, say, for instance, some of the questions, can Malaysia withstand the outflows? So our position in terms of trade in goods and services, the current account is still strong. It's in surplus, you know. 10 billion in the first quarter against 5.7 billion in the immediately preceding quarter. And but the overall balance, including capital outflows, is what matters. And if you look at this, this is reflected in Bank Negara's foreign exchange reserves. So outflows will mean reserves go down and the opposite for inflows. So if you look at this figure, it is still high at almost 400 billion ringgit at the end of May. Or over US 105 billion, which is a very respectable figure as far as reserves go. And this is virtually unchanged from the figure at the end of last year. So over a period of the first 5 months of the year, if you look at the net outflows, there have not been net outflows, you know. The level of foreign exchange reserves have remained the same. And we have, at Kennebis, we put a chart up of the foreign exchange reserves. From 1998. In 1998, the level of foreign exchange reserves was just over US$20,000. Right. It's now more than five times that. That's
20,000 US dollars.
Yes. So now it's
billions.
Sorry?
20 billion or 20,000?
Sorry, US 20 billion.
Shorter.
Yeah. Right. So that has, sorry about that. So that's now, it's now five times that at 105 US billion. So, and if you look at whether the ringgit has had attacks before, so the ringgit weakened considerably in the aftermath of the world financial crisis, you know? And the Bank Negara's reserves fell from about US 140 billion to just over to about 90 billion in the 2007 to 2009 period. And then it subsequently recovered up to 140 billion by 2011. And then now it is it has dropped in the, especially so in the last few weeks, to around 100 billion plus. So if you look at it that way, the level of foreign exchange reserves that Bangladesh has is a lot more than it was in 1998, and it is able to withstand any kind of weakness in the ringgit for a pretty long period of time. So, and considering that if you look at the economy overall, the growth is still strong at over 5%. The trade position is still good. Reserves are strong. So the economic fundamentals still continue to be overall pretty good, especially on a comparison basis with other countries.
Yeah, Gunnar, I think these numbers are fine and dandy, but if you looked at it from the pressures of a crisis, right? We came out of that crisis in 97. At the time, the foreign exchange reserves were about 3 months of our total imports. That's called the FX cover, right? And right now, the FX cover is like 6 or 7 months of our imports. Yeah. The thing is that the international community of speculators and hedge fund managers right now have grown by leaps and bounds since the Asian financial crisis. And I think the money flows, even to the extent of actually able to short the ringgit right now, the arsenal is a lot bigger than at that time in 97. And even at that time in 97, Mahathir had already accused external forces of manipulating the ringgit. Yes.
And so each time he opened his mouth at that point of time, the ringgit went down.
Went further down, right?
And some people are saying that in this current crisis, each time he opens his mouth, the ringgit goes down. But I think that's a bit extreme. I think yes, the firepower is a lot more. But remember, I think we can always use the exchange control weapon, at the end of the day. So that will hold back any kind of speculators mounting an all-out attack.
Yeah. So, and if I may just hark back again to what Mahathir did, was that he made a short-term speculation on the ringgit illegal, and he welcomed long-term FDIs into the country. So you couldn't trade ringgit in the offshore, but if you wanted to invest in Malaysia in the long term, that is being welcome. And I suppose that kind of thing can be done.
Even now, you can't trade ringgit offshore. It is not an the currency is not internationalized. So that also makes it very difficult to mount a speculative attack on the ringgit.
Gunnar, I attended a festival over the weekend where Mahathir was speaking, and he actually said one of his most dangerous ideas was the decision to peg the ringgit at 380. And in fact, he's actually also suggested re-pegging the ringgit, but not to do that against the greenback, but in fact to do it to revert to the gold standard. Have you heard his comment?
He has talked about a gold standard previously, but I think people don't understand how a gold standard works. I don't, So you can understand, say, pegging to the U.S. dollar. How would you peg to a gold standard? And gold, too, is a very volatile commodity, So what happens when the gold price goes up or down, But I would certainly say it's not the right time to re-peg the ringgit at the moment. Bank Negara is perfectly capable of handling this at these levels. The amount of foreign exchange reserves that Bank Negara has is fine, And at the end of the day, you should perhaps let the ringgit move according to market supply and demand, unless this is being influenced by attacks on it by speculators. Foreign exchange control is a weapon which can use in a time of dire emergency, and that's it.
We're not there yet.
That comes with a lot of PR baggage, but that's available.
Yeah.
So in closing, what do you see for the near future then?
More volatility, Gunnar?
I think there will be volatility simply because, what is happening is people are watching the data in the U.S. to see how it comes up.
Okay.
And once interest rates in the U.S. start to increase, and that is reflected by an increase in the rates by the Fed, then you will see, at first at least, some amount of funds going back to the U.S.
Right.
So, but once that uncertainty is removed, so we know, this is what is the new interest rate environment, then there will be a bit more stability which will arise in the world markets, I believe.
Okay.
And then you will have less volatility in the ringgit. No, but remember, our interest rates are actually quite a bit higher than the U.S. interest rates now. So even if the U.S. increases its interest rates, we still have quite a bit of buffer there, you know, in terms of the interest rates.
Okay. Thanks so much for that. Every Monday, we have Pui P. Gunasekaram, who's, of course, the joint CEO and also founding editor of KiniBiz with us. Pop on over to kinibiz.com if you want to find out more about Guna, and also lots and lots of stuff there to for you to pick up on as well at kinibiz.com. So thanks again, Guna, for joining us. And we'll see you again next Monday on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.